It's Monday, September 4th, 2006, and you're listening to episode 17 of Hear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 53 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan. And with us on the mics today, we've got Chad.
Hi.
Dawn.
Hi.
And Adam.
Hi.
I know this took us several episodes to see off John, but he is now actually for real gone to Rome.
Yeah, he's in Rome as we speak.
See, lots of fun.
See, part of where I think the confusion came from was we did the Farewell to John bonus episode before we were entirely sure when he was leaving.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so we released it. Well, then we had an episode or two where John came back, which kind of made the whole thing seem a little strange. But he is now for real gone to Rome. And he'll be back, I think, in December, which works out pretty well because by then, Donna's going to be later along in her pregnancy.
Mm-hmm.
And
oh, boy.
I don't know, obviously, with the pregnancy and then, of course, the actual birth, how available she's going to be to even
do
this podcast.
Well, that's not until, like, mid-March, though.
Oh, okay.
I'll be available, just maybe a bit crabby.
But see, that...
Oh, my.
That may
I'm
be
giving
good.
You the eye, but I don't want that chair empty if you're going to be crabby.
Are you? No. The more sass she brings to these mics...
That's true.
The more controversial this show gets.
I know how this is going to end up, because I'm going to get most of the sass, because you're so non-confrontational and chatty. But she doesn't like Chad.
Well,
she's got to deal with you every day.
I do like to abuse you, Adam. That
I know
true.
You do.
That is true.
That's why I was nervous about this cast where it would be appearing at the same time.
What would she even sass you about?
Oh, have you seen that face?
This is the face of an angel.
Yeah.
You're lucky you look
my
like
mom
your...
says so.
You're lucky yeah. you look like your mother.
All right, well, speaking of Adam's face, I want to remind everyone that we are having a contest for Freak Show characters.
That was the best segue ever.
That was awesome.
We're having a contest for Freak Show characters. This is kind of to make good fun out of some of the things we said, I guess. It was episode 14 and 15. I don't remember exactly. But the way it works is this. Go to our forums. We have a whole new topic area called contests, within which we have a thread started specifically for this contest. All you have to do is come up with an idea for a good, deep, interesting Freak Show character, so something that's not a normal class or race, like a dragon bartender or whatever your mind comes up with. Post it there. Keep it down to about 500 words or less, because we don't do this full time, so we don't want to read your 16-page dialogue about your character. We're going to judge the best one, and whichever one we pick, we were going to give you a $30 gift code for Geek Label, G-E-E-K label.com, which is a purveyor of kind of geek associated t-shirts and things like that.
T-shirts with witty, geeky slogans
yeah,
on them.
Exactly. We are going to pick that winner this Saturday, September 9th at around 12 o'clock Central Time. So be sure your entry is up by then. Anything after that point, maybe great stuff. We just won't see it. And mm-hmm. if you've got a character idea that's funny or something, you can post it. What we're looking for is actually a deep, viable character, not one that's just funny or glittery or
right.
whatnot.
So if I write up a really good werewolf librarian, it'll go over well?
Not you. You're a host.
Well, yeah, you're a host. You can't win.
But I don't ever remember that being one of the stipulations.
Well, it is now. Well, are you planning on submitting?
Maybe.
Well, what were you planning on submitting?
Well, if I told you, I wouldn't post it. Someone would steal my brilliance.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure your asparagus zombie is really interesting there.
Is it white asparagus or green asparagus?
I'm submitting twice.
But yes, Dan, you are correct. A werewolf zombie would be a perfect example. Or a werewolf librarian, rather.
Asparagus zombie, werewolf librarian.
Werewolf librarian would be a perfect example of a great Freak Show character for this contest.
Indeed.
I also want to give a little bit of a response to some of the feedback we got off of Bonus Episode 7. Now, if you haven't listened to Bonus Episode 7, we devoted it to talking about video games, which, in addition to role-playing games, is something we are all very right. interested in, but we don't normally talk about because this is a podcast about tabletop gaming.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of podcasts and a lot of websites out there already dedicated to video games.
Yeah, there are far more video game podcasts than there are role-playing game podcasts.
Right, and I feel like we'd just be saturating the market, so we generally withhold our views on such things. But we kind of cut loose in Episode 7 and generated probably the most single issue feedback I have seen on a non-incendiary subject. This is the first time we've gotten a vast amount of feedback on one topic, and it wasn't because we had everyone riled up. So
now it's time to rile them up.
Right. No. How would we rile them up with video games, though?
I don't know, Dan. You're pretty riled about this capital ship combat.
Oh,
thing.
I am. Yeah. Talk fiery.
So I think someone's riled.
But that's the problem. I'm angry all by myself. It's not like there's a huge contradictory opinion that I'm up against.
You're just shaking your fist at the heavens. Yeah. You're like, give me my long ship combat.
Exactly.
In outer space.
But one of the things we asked is, would you guys like us to talk more about video games in general or to keep role-playing games? And the feedback we got was almost 100% across the board said, you know, we love the bonus episode. We'd like for you guys to talk a little bit about video games as they relate to role-playing games, but to generally 90% of the time avoid the subject and stick to tabletop games. Mm-hmm. So,
which is something that we'll always do no matter what. This is a role-playing game podcast.
Right, but in light of the feedback, we are going to do what you guys suggested. We're going to go that route. We're going to keep this to mostly role-playing games. But because the feedback said they liked what we said and would like to hear a little bit of it, we may occasionally throw in 5 minutes here or there on a computer RPG or a little bit on an MMO or something, but we won't make them huge dominating topics of the show. Mm-hmm. Just little tiny diversions here.
But we'll
there.
Definitely do more bonus episodes because, well, we love doing them. And apparently only 3 people listen to them, but...
And I like video games.
I think we made it all the way up to 4.
Oh, no. We got a lot more than 3 feedbacks in life.
Yeah.
We keep making that joke, and I can't think where it comes from. It's back in the first episode or two, we really didn't think anyone would listen to the show.
Yeah, so, bonus episode or not.
Yeah, so we always made the joke, the 2 people listening, but actually, I mean, now checking our stats, and I realize stats are not a science, but I mean, it's estimating we have some like 500 listeners per episode, so.
Which is good for us.
Yeah, it is good for a podcast. It's only been out a matter of really a handful of months. Yeah. I feel pretty satisfied about where
Excellent.
We're at.
Poisoning the mind of 500,000 people.
Yeah.
Sweet.
And, put that in perspective, I think some of the bigger, more popular ones like Dragon's Landing In and Round Table and those kind of things, I think they pull in 1,000, over 1,000. I don't know what their stats are, but they're pretty high up there. A lot more than us.
Yeah, I don't know either.
They're huge.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know that a lot of the really big podcasts, which are not gaming podcasts, some of them do boast tens of thousands of listeners.
Yeah.
Within the gaming podcasts, I have no idea, but it's my impression the larger ones are looking in the lower, you know, couple grand, 1 grand, 2 grand-ish.
We should organize an informal census.
Well, actually, they were talking about there's a podcasting kind of guild that's formed amongst the gaming podcasters where we just kick around various topics and ideas. And they were talking on there about trying to get some kind of a survey out to our listeners, like across all the shows. Mm-hmm. And some of the subjects on there didn't really apply to us, but just in the interest of playing ball, we agreed we would run the survey anyway. And I would be curious to see, because as it stands right now, we really don't know anything about our listeners. I mean, we know there's a certain number of people that post on the forums. There's a certain number of people we know personally that listen to these podcasts. But overall, I really don't have a sense of what the trends are amongst our listeners. Actually, we're even probably more lucky than most shows, because I've talked to the hosts of shows that are far bigger than ours who have said they struggle to get even a fraction of the feedback we get.
Right.
Where they'll say, hey, what did you guys think about this? And get no answers or very few answers.
So thanks, guys.
Yeah, thanks, guys. And but by the way, if you never have sent us any feedback, if at any point we say something you want to respond to, or we didn't say something you'd like to hear us talk about, feartheboot.com, we have a contact form for email, we have forums, we've got a link under our link section to Odeo. All kinds of stuff out there, so please don't hesitate to get a hold of us about anything.
Yeah, and we love hearing from you.
Now, going back to something that I said in the bonus episode 7 that actually got really what I was surprised was several comments on, of all the things that were said in that show, was I made a couple comments about capital ship combat or giant spaceship combat.
And this is a subject that you feel very strongly about.
Absolutely.
Let me reiterate. This is something... You feel very
Dan,
strongly.
You, Dan, feel very strongly. Well,
Dan has a passion for the capital ship.
Apparently, I do in general. I love space opera. But having, and I think...
I like a good space opera, too.
My problem right now is there isn't any good space opera out there.
Well, do you, space opera role-playing game, or space opera video game, or space opera movie,
movies,
or all the above?
Movies the big one I go after, because the past Star Wars movies were a joke.
I don't...
And you didn't have a whole lot of big fleet on fleet actions and things like that anyways. Mostly just guys hopping around with laser swords and things.
Yeah.
But, you know, I guess on TV-wise, you've got really Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah.
Which is really about it. I mean, I'm not aware of a whole lot of other big space opera type stuff.
I don't watch the Battlestar Galactica, the new one.
You're right. Battlestar Galactica is exactly how you describe capital ship combat to should be.
Babylon 5 was pretty close to how I'd want to. I had some beefs with it, but it was pretty close to how I'd want
it. If you take it from the model of cap ship, disgorges fighters, and the fighters fight, and then the cap ships fight amongst the fighters and stuff, which is really cool, and it's just kind of one way of taking it, then, I agree. And then they also use the Newtonian physics. Now, of course, Babylon 5, if you're like this purist, they had explosions and sound effects in space. Right. But you know what? I always forgive that in a movie. I know it's totally inaccurate of sound in space and explosion space, that sort of thing. But you know what? Watching 20 minutes of complete silence is boring. Yeah.
Well, they cover it up with radio chatter.
Yeah, they do. And they take it from the perspective of inside the cockpit.
But anyways, getting back to the point, there's not much out there. What is out there, it's a subject I'm highly opinionated on, kind of like superheroes. Except with superheroes, there's so much out there, you can find something you like, namely Batman.
Yes.
The new ones, that is. The Batman Begins. And with cap ships, I don't have anything to choose from. Now, the comment I made that got a surprising amount of feedback, because I thought really this was just my private axe to grind that nobody but me cared about, was my comment about how I would like to see capital ships fighting on the broadsides. And I was surprised anybody but me really cared about this, that I don't like where ships fight nose to nose. Now, some people were asking me what I meant by that, so I want to clarify this real quick and then move on to a more role-playing game relevant subject. So those of you that don't care, bear with me just for about one more minute. And we'll...
You got that soapbox formed, Adam?
Here you go.
But
go
ahead. Some people were asking me by that, did I mean like actual old tall ship passes at close range, and people saying, well, no, capital ships would fight at long range, which I agree with. The reason I said fighting along the broadsides is because, first of all, if you assume that a drive core is a long device, or you look at space operas in general, and spaceships always are rendered almost without exception as being long, thin vessels, you can simply mount more guns going down a broadside than you can the front or back. Secondly, if the broadside starts getting destroyed, you can roll and fight with the other broadside because you're in space. You know, you can spin in 180 degrees. Whereas if you're fighting on the front, you really can't flip anything else to them except the back, which presumably is taken up by your engines.
So, well, and if you have a big enough reaction engine, that's a weapon in and of itself.
Yeah, maybe.
Was it the Heinlein law of space combat or something said that the strength of your greatest ship's weapon is directly proportional to the size of your reaction
drive. But see, even that assumes something, which is it assumes that space combat occurs at close range.
Yeah.
If space combat occurs at long range, your thruster is really only dangerous to the rest of your fleet formation.
Right,
it's not dangerous to your enemies. I wanted to clarify that kind of real quick and now move on to the more relevant subject, which is spaceship combat.
The more relevant subject.
More relevant subject. You had to bear with me. This is I purchased the equipment. I could make these kind of rants. So
there were three hosts in the room who were like, do we really need to talk about this? No, not really. No. Yeah, we're talking about it. It's already on the list. Really?
He who controls the list has unbridled power.
Yep, pretty much.
I have the bully pulpit.
Dan, you are the Larry King Live of cap ship combat.
You know, I ought to do a whole podcast just on capital ship combat. Anyway, all right, moving on to the more relevant subject is spaceship combat within a role-playing game. Because we talked in the bonus episode about how most video games do not real accurately depict space battles. That you tend to fly like you're in an atmosphere, not like you're in space. Your combat occurs at very close ranges. You have maximum speeds, not maximum rates of acceleration, and blah, blah, blah. But a similar problem exists within a role-playing game, except I think it's for a very different reason. Within a role-playing game, you always have to make that choice balance between ease of play and realistic rules. Because the simple fact of the matter is, reality is complicated.
No.
So the question is, do you want to have realistic space combats or quick and easy space combats. And I wanted to kick around the space combat systems in a few of the major RPGs out there, and a few minor ones we've played over the years, mm-hmm. and kind of dissect what it is we like and don't like about their systems for space combat. All right, let's start off on the far, far end of this, the really super complicated stuff. Let's start with mm-hmm. the old one out of print now, Renegade Legion.
Yeah.
Renegade Legion, for those of you that have never played it, your ship had a progressive damage diagram. It didn't have hit yeah. points. When you were shot, the enemy would slowly work through external systems and internal systems, and mm-hmm. you had a little flow diagram you'd work through.
And it was more than... It was like a really complex flow diagram that looked like a circuit board plan.
Yeah.
And you work through critical systems on the circuit, and it was... really cool.
And they also had...
It does sound cool.
Yeah.
It was really cool. And they also had... they used a pseudo-Newtonian physic, mm-hmm. where you per
round...
The
one time I played it, that screwed me.
Oh, yeah, because you flew off the edge of the map.
Yeah, well, when we played it, the one time I played it, I was thinking something like Star Wars, which is completely unrealistic. And I had a really fast ship. I slammed on the acceleration... and zoop, right off the map.
Right.
I mean, and I just kept going.
Because the rule system allowed for rates of acceleration. Mm-hmm. It did not have, you did not move five spaces. You accelerated an additional five spaces. So you go 5, 10, 15, 20, 25. I mean, you could work yourself up to any speed you wanted. And they had done the geometry so that when you wanted to turn your ship 60 degrees, because it was on hexes, so mm-hmm. every turn is 60 degrees, they had worked out the vector physics of roughly how many points of thrust would it take to turn your ship while moving at that velocity forward. And this was probably the most complicated, I'm racking my brain here, I'm going to have to say, yeah, it was the most complicated space combat system I've ever played. And what did you think of it?
I don't remember much about it. I remember really? Flying off the map, and I remember the sheet. I mean, you got to remember, we played this game 15 years ago?
That was not. It was about 10 years ago, but yeah, it was a while
we
ago.
We played this game 10 years ago?
All right, Dawn, did you play Renegade Legion with us when we
I
played?
I did not.
You did not? Okay, because no.
What
was...
I remember of it was pretty cool. I remember positive things. I remember it was pretty cool.
The only space opera I've ever played was Star Wars.
That's not space
that's
opera.
That's not really.
Well, there's the comment that's going to get you in trouble.
There was spaceship travel, so... There...
Well, spaceship travel does not mean space opera. To me, what space opera is that you have these, you're in deep space, you have these titanic, huge ships doing this slow, deadly dance.
I would take it, I would be a little bit broader than that, in that I would say that to me, space opera is about huge, epic changes in politics and war at the level of space. For example, even with Star Wars, there are points in the movies where it really ceases to be space opera.
Well, because it's all about the interpersonal relationships.
Yeah, it's about the interpersonal relationships of a couple people. It's not about fleets and politics and these huge shifts in the balance of power. And mm-hmm. it's not like, I mean, a World War II movie that occurs in the year 4000 or whatever.
Right.
It's about something much more limited than that. Well, if you don't remember Renegade Legion, and Dawn,
I remember positive things.
And Adam, you guys have never played Renegade Legion. I guess I'm back on my lone soapbox here. I liked it. Of course, I'm not as bothered by deep, crunchy rules as much as some people are. But the reason
you mean me, don't you?
Yeah, we mean you.
We do mean you. By some people, I mean you. And
it's all about that.
But the other thing I liked about it was, yeah, you had to reference a lot of charts and stuff. But the game was slick enough that the longer you played it, a lot of it did get pretty natural. You didn't have to keep looking it up. You just had a memorized sense of what was happening.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one that's probably even worse than that, that I have never played, is Task Force's Star Trek game. Starfleet Battles?
Starfleet Battles, I think that's what it's called. Yeah.
I have never played it.
I've seen it played. I've never played it myself. I have been at a con, and I've sort of stood there and watched them play. Not even just pass by, but I mean like looking at the sheets, looking at the maps, trying to follow what they were doing. It seems, how can I put this? Very complex, yet very amateurish production. Like, everything's really ugly, and it's not appealing, but the game seems really, really complex, like it should be. But then again, I never played it.
Yeah, I have. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Dawn.
Oh, I see. So your beef with it is that it's cosmetically unsound or something?
Well, yeah. I mean, this is entertainment. It should be appealing. You know. I mean,
But on the other hand, you say with video games, you know, it's content you're concerned with, not the way the graphics look.
Well, let me put it to you this way. I haven't played a text-based video game in years. Out of a video game, I do want some amount of graphics, but I want more story. When you're talking about a game like Starfleet Battles, you're not really getting into the story. I mean, you can, of course, but it's not necessarily a role-playing game first. It is a tactical combat game first. So the story isn't as important. I mean, it's like Battletech. You can play straight Battletech, no role-playing whatsoever, and it's a tactical combat game that looks very appealing. The mechs look really cool. The models look cool. The maps are really well done and cool. The mech sheets are well put together and professionally put together and are appealing to the eye. The rule books are appealing to the eye. You know, it's a total experience. It's all in one.
I'd have to play it before I pass judgment on it.
Same here.
I don't know.
Yeah, like I said, I never played it though.
Yeah,
so
function over form though.
Yeah, my taste. See, I wish.
Now, I'm not saying it's a bad game.
Yeah, well,
I never played.
We may come back to this because in early November, my older brother's going to be back in town. He did play this quite a bit. Mm-hmm. And so he would have a more educated opinion than we do. I wouldn't typically even bring up something we haven't played because I don't want to give uneducated reaction. But the reason I felt I had to bring this up is because I want to talk about Spaceship Combat. And this is one of the big seminal works of Spaceship Combat. I mean, a lot of people that are into this play this Task Force game. My hesitation on it personally was never an appearance issue. It was always, I was told it was unnecessarily complicated, that everything that needed to be hard wasn't, and everything that shouldn't have been hard was. Mm. And once again, don't know here, completely uneducated opinion. This is just what I have been told about it pretty unanimously by people that have played it. But there may be people out there who play that just really love this. We may come back to this one quite a few podcasts from now, but I just wanted to mention it in passing.
Well, I was going to say, too, that the Star Trek game that we have played was the old FASA one.
I love
which
that.
Which is really good.
Yeah,
and appealing to the eye.
I loved the FASA Star Trek ship combat game.
Yeah.
And let me explain why I liked it. One of the things I really enjoyed about it is under the advanced rules, one of the things they allowed you to do was to take the ship and basically break it up into pieces where you could have a guy who's playing the engineer and he would get an engineering console. Mm. And you could have a guy who's playing the science officer and he would get a science console, so on and so forth. And I actually took their templates and reworked them a little bit because they had, I believe, 3 consoles. I reworked it into 4 consoles. But at the start of battle, you'd have one guy playing the captain who just gives orders.
Yeah, he doesn't have anything.
Who just says, you know, raise the shields, bring us about, fire all the phasers of this particular Klingon. Now you go to, nobody talks anymore. Mm-hmm. You go to the engineer and say, okay, that's the captain's orders. What are you doing? And he works through his worksheet and says, I'm sending this much power to shields, this much power to weapon, this much power to the engines, dispatching a repair crew to fix this. Go to the helm. Okay, you've got enough power for 3 movement points. Where are you going? Work on down like that. I love that system. The only thing I did not like about FASA's system was 2 things. One, if you were playing the role-playing game as well, the role-playing game was not real heavily integrated into the ship combat game. So you have, let's say, a helmsman who's going to shoot the phasers, and really his gunnery skill doesn't figure into the equation.
Hmm.
That you just shoot a 1d10 and you have a fixed number to hit. And so that's something I monkeyed with personally when I run the game, is I make it more skill-based. The second thing that I didn't like is I don't like the way they handled shields. And in some ways, I blame this on Star Trek as a TV show, because within Star Trek, they can never seem to decide, do shields block out, is it A, percentage of damage, or B, a totality of damage?
Mm-hmm.
That is, it when you get hit by a photon, do you take some damage but less? Or when you get hit by a photon, does it just do nothing until your shields are down?
Does it bounce off the shield?
And they do both. They do
the
both,
show.
Yeah. They waffle from one episode to the next, from one movie to the next. They just kind of pick whatever's most dramatic at the moment, which I think left FASA really unsure what to do with the shields.
Right.
And so I don't like the way they ended up implementing them, which is they have the system where your shields have a threshold to be knocked down, So possibility B. But then they instantly come back up thereafter, like within the next combat phase, somewhat implying a system A.
I don't like the idea of shields anyway in my sci-fi.
I don't either. And in the space opera stuff I've written, shields and teleporters are two things I just do not like.
Shields, teleporters, replicators. Those are, to me, all of that is Deus Ex Machina.
Yeah, just God by machine to make the plot easier to do. And let's go to the far opposite extreme, though. One that I think suffers from its simplicity. The D20 Star Wars game. And I love the role-playing game. I really do enjoy the D20 Star Wars role-playing game. But they have a new ship combat system in there that I think trips over its own 2 feet. Mm-hmm. It is not simple enough to really be a simple quick play system. I mean, it's somewhat complicated. But
which is, I guess, what you want out of a system.
Well,
like
but here's the thing. But it is insufficiently complicated to really be realistic. It seems to raise more questions than it answers. I remember, for example, missiles in particular. They just have really screwy ways for the way that missiles fly and the way that missiles impact things. Their rules for dodging and maneuverability were really, really screwy. And we tried playing the Star Wars game a couple months ago, and we tried using their ship combat system. It didn't work. Mm-hmm. We had a lot of problems with it, and I really wish they would tear those rules out and rewrite them in a much more defined sense and pick one. Be simple, be complicated.
It's a D20 system.
That's
Is
correct.
Their ship combat system a D20 ship combat system, or do they do their own rules for that?
It is D20-esque. It is and I say that because, for example, you have the difficulty numbers, and they're modified. Mm. You roll a D20 and add something to it. So you have the basic structure there of a D20 system. Now, your ships do not exactly have hit points and levels. Yeah.
And your ship is never flat-footed or
you can't get your ship flat-footed. There are different conditions the ship can be caught in. Mm-hmm. So it feels very much like a D20 character, but it's not really exactly the same thing.
Well, that's good.
Now, what about Traveler? You said you had played some Traveler.
No, I never said I played Traveler.
Oh.
I remember him saying he didn't play Traveler.
I had a friend. Actually, he was my history teacher in high school who was a huge Mega Traveler fan. I think that's what it's called. I think they had Traveler and then they had Mega Traveler. I'm not sure. Now, he always talked about it because we always talked about role-playing games after the class and stuff. And he always said that it was a great ship combat game. And I know that the books are like 5 inches thick. They're really, really weighty tomes with tons and tons of rules and history and stuff. And they have like whole systems for pages and pages and pages of making an entire planet from scratch down to the most minute detail from like what kind of atmosphere it has and geology and weather patterns. And then it has a whole one for making alien life. And actually he had his class use those rules to make planets as part of a class project, which then he took and used in his game.
That is the greatest story you've ever told. Is this the first time I've heard it?
I will bet out there right now there's someone listening to this podcast who is a teacher who has used and abused their position to make their class generate material for their role-playing game.
Like,
write up an interesting fantasy character. You got 30 people in your class, you have 30 NPC templates.
Oh, wow.
Jesus.
If there is a story here, somebody send it in.
Yes,
we need to hear this. I know what's going on. We just need to find out who's doing it.
We won't put out your name. We won't put out what school you're in. Oh, my God, I want to hear these
stories. Actually, Traveler, though, is kind of one of the spots in role-playing games where I surprise myself. Mm-hmm. Because I can look at something like Task Force's Starfleet Battles, and I can say, you know, I'm so satisfied with the system that FASA created that I just don't have any, there's no need for it. You know, if you're completely satisfied with D&D, why grab another fantasy system? I guess unless that system.
Unless it's a setting that you're
in. So, I mean, and of course, some people say, well, I like the variety, and I'm not going there. I'm just saying, personally, this is my take. But with Traveler, here is something that really does present a sort of space opera sci-fi that's much more up my alley. Yet I have never picked it up. And I think this is one of those things I'm going to have to start hitting up eBay and try to track down some of the rules.
Do they even make Traveler anymore? I'm not even sure.
I don't know. I don't think so. But
if you want to bulk out your bookshelf of role-playing games, Traveler's the way to go. Those are some thick books, and they got a lot of them, too.
See, maybe I'll have to pick that up. All right, well, that's enough on spaceship combat.
Thank you.
All right.
Oh, my God. I'm dancing in my chair over here.
He was, actually. Chatter, he was like a little bird dance. I'm not sure what to make of it.
Dude, you want to see our little bird dance, you're going to have to come to Archon.
Yeah. October 5th through 8th, if you want to come see us, Archon, Collinsville, St. Louis, archonstl.org, archonstl.org. Next convention we're going to be at.
And we're going to be doing panels. We're going to be doing
possibly a workshop of some kind. I'm not sure what that means.
We're going to be doing interviews, like walking around doing interviews. And then I'm pretty sure we're going to be interviewing like the guest of honor, one of which is the voice of Ren and Stimpy.
What?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. You know, somebody
you get to interview the voice of either Ren or Stimpy, or it's one guy doing both.
Tangent here.
Here we go. Yes. Something I can talk about.
We have always wanted to have
spaceships.
No. If Ren and Stimpy were in a spaceship.
No.
All right. We wanted to get, what are those called? The little voice tags where it's like, you know, this is so and so, and you're listening to such and such FM.
Oh.
What are those called?
Announcers?
I don't think they're stingers.
Like little promos.
But, oh, yeah, yeah.
They're,
It's not, I won't say.
Well,
we'll call them tags so we don't spend 20 minutes trying to come up with a name.
We've always said there's two of them we wanted, which is Bill Cosby and Colonel Jack Jackson.
And I'd love a George Takei one.
I'm disappointed that at Archon, the only stab we get here is the Ren and Stimpy guys. But see, you want to know something that irritates the heck out of those people, but they expect it, so we're not going to do it.
Yeah, ask him to do the voice.
Yeah, ask him to do the voice. Is exactly it. Could you do the voice of Ren and say you're listening to Fear the Boot, and deep down they want to stab us, but we have a mic in front of them, so they can't. So they just have to stab us with their eyes.
Yes.
No, so, I think he'd probably say, well, how much are you going to pay me?
Ooh.
That's also another concern.
Unless we bring in George Takei's. Oh, my.
Oh, my.
The answer is nothing.
On WoW today, one of the guild members asked me if I wanted to join one of his Archon games. And I'm like, I don't know. I think I have to do things at Archon instead of sleep all day and drink all night.
That's one of the great things, is that while this may be taking up a lot of our time, it's also a great excuse to get out of socially uncomfortable situations.
Like role-playing with strangers?
When someone's like, hey, do you want to join the vampire LARP?
Okay, all right. I put the kosh on that really quick.
We're going to the furry room party. You want to come?
You want to yip?
No.
I got to go interview people.
There isn't enough Bud Light in the world.
Fear the Boot does not do yaoi.
Thank you. Thank you for clarifying that. I never want that to be a subject that is in question about this podcast. Never at any point in this podcast life do I want that question to come up.
I have friends who are going to be very disappointed.
Do they listen to the podcast?
No.
What, we're not into Slash and Yowie. And
well, you're
one
not.
One of those reads it.
Well, actually, see.
I do not read Slash. Thank you very much.
So
you,
regularly.
No, you definitely only defended half of that accusation. But we can continue.
You do goats and sheep. I have never done a sheep in my entire life.
The goat said he loved me.
I only read straight fan fiction. Thank you very much.
You actually write.
Yes. I write straight fan fiction.
I got bad news. Sakura and Kakashi are not getting together.
Oh, snap. She's going to spread
it. Time to move on.
I don't care.
You know, that brings up another thing. Maybe we should give Dawn a plug.
I was going to say, I was trying to over all this rudeness here about Kirk and Spock or whatever.
You know, in the beginning, you asked why Dawn would give me all of her
sass.
Her sass. Maybe this is the reason. Precisely why.
All right.
You encourage.
So, I do.
All right. Several of us here have things we do outside of the podcast. Okay, for example, I do a little prose writing, though right now I don't have anything out there to show you, which is why I haven't mentioned it.
He still hasn't let me read any of it.
But Dawn, you actually are currently actively writing fan fiction,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I'm currently active in the Naruto fandom. Yeah, writing fan fiction, mainly just romance fics.
If anyone is curious to read your stuff, would you be willing to put a link to it in our shameless plugs thing on the
Of course.
You're
I can't
also,
embarrass myself any more than I have already.
You're also on you're on fanfic.net.
I'm on fanfiction.net.
How do they get to your stories from there?
Well, my handle is Sure Is Dawn. It's the same as my handle on
And that,
through the boot form.
That's Sure as Dawn. SureasDawn. Sure as Dawn is like certain as dawn.
Yep. Mm-hmm. At fanfic.net. And just do a search on your handle, and then there's your stories?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay. We've had 15 variations of fanfiction.net, fanfic.net. What is the exact website?
I'm pretty sure it's fanfiction.net.
Fanfiction.net. Okay. I've personally not read any of this. I probably should, because I'm interested in your writing, but I haven't read any of your writing.
You're not a Naruto fan. You're not going to understand
that's
it.
That's true.
So.
You're not even going to understand my Sakura and Kakashi
By context, I was guessing it was two guys.
It's a guy and a girl.
It's a guy and a girl.
Yeah, it's a 30-year-old man and a 14-year-old girl. Yeah.
No,
this is definitely the stuff of anime.
What do you mean, no?
No, I.
Oh, okay, okay.
I raised their ages to where she's legal.
It's a 40-year-old man and an 18-year-old girl.
You can find all of her stuff by going on to fanfiction.net, go to the Naruto section, do a search on barely legal.
Let's move on.
Yeah, somebody's going to get punched, and it's going to be me.
Yeah, I found out we had an unedited profanity in bonus episode 7, and this conversation added to it. We are probably going to lose our ratings. So let's
move on. You guys
wonder
why I never talk about my writing of fan fiction. This is why.
Because it's sexy.
Because
it's too hot for our ratings.
It is.
Too hot to understand. With not the word two. The number
Dawn
two.
Dawn explained her writing. We'd quickly become an adult-only podcast.
Indeed.
Liz.
Okay.
RPG Nightcap.
Jesus. Moving on.
Okie dokie.
Merciless.
Now, Chad, you had wanted to talk about... This is the most disorganized episode we've had in a long time.
Yeah, thanks, Dawn.
I don't blame Dawn.
Yeah.
I actually start... Right here, you and me.
Excellent.
I blame you and me.
Excellent.
Good, because the two of us haven't talked in the last 20 minutes.
We need to talk about something that we can draw those two.
I think this has something to do with me being a Wildo and you wanting to go to Alderaan or whatever.
What about Play-Doh?
Oh, it's something they can relate to. I don't know.
Nah, role-playing games. All right, let's get back into that.
One of the things you had said you want to talk about in this podcast, and I have kind of a sister subject to this, but we'll go and start with yours. Role-playing in pop culture settings. And first, I want you to explain what that means, and then kind of begin your mental unload on the subject.
Well, role-playing in a pop culture setting, what we mean by that is, well, very simply, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the role-playing game. Serenity, the role-playing game. Stargate, the role-playing
game. What you're talking about, if we were to kind of put this
in
a nutshell.
Those were all TV shows, and we don't just mean TV shows.
Count Star Wars?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yes. And I would also count, like, Dune, the role-playing game, and Conan, the role-playing game.
So you're talking about the role-playing game.
Yeah.
So you're talking about taking a setting from something in pop culture, a book, a TV show, a movie, that was not meant for a role-playing game.
ZZ Top, Low Rider, the role-playing game.
That'd be awesome.
I would think so.
Roll for beard.
Every time you gain a level, you get another inch on your beard.
Oh my god. Best episode ever.
Best or worst, one of the two. But you're talking about taking anything from pop culture, books, TVs, movies, that was not meant for a role-playing game and trying to create a role-playing game based on it.
Right.
Okay. So now that we have defined what we're talking about.
And it could be professionally done, or it could be a fan effort, or it could be a homebrew thing.
Okay.
Too.
So for example, on a fan one that comes to mind pretty quickly is the...
Buffy the Vampire Slayer one.
I didn't know there was. I'm not surprised
there is
official
one.
There was a fan made Highlander expansion for the World of Darkness system.
Yes, there was.
Where you could play a quickened immortal or whatever they're
called.
I
think I played that game.
You did. You played a Highlander.
I played that game.
You played Christopher Lambert because there can only be one.
Not exactly. He was playing a Catholic cardinal or bishop or something like that.
Oh, yeah. We played a medieval campaign.
And it was a medieval campaign of vampire. And he was a Highlander. I was a regular human, but had, like, all these points, or lost all his points, like, in a Beast Within. So I was, like, this kind of, like, raging human.
Yeah. And you were all pissed off. It was great.
He would use me, basically, as his attack dog, where another Highlander would come along.
He was my bodyguard, and I'd just be like, kill him. Yeah. He's a pagan. Look, he's exploding in lightning. I'll absorb the evil.
Exactly. He'd have me go kill the guy. And then, like, when the guy was almost dead, he's like, wait. You know, the Holy Father must execute him, and then go over and cut his head off and quicken from it. And it was a it was either really neat or really dumb.
Yeah, it was pretty dumb, but it was fun.
It was fun.
Yeah.
So there you go.
You guys done over there?
we're all over the board like a bunch of hamsters on cocaine today. All right, now Chad, what is your opinion though on these role playing? What is your tirade here regarding role playing games in pop culture setting?
I think that a lot of them could be good because I mean you're talking about an established fan base, an established setting. You have people who love the setting.
Right.
And also, you have people, they may not know much about like a given role-playing game like Twilight 2000, which is a post-nuclear role-playing game that has this big plot, huge arcing plot and stuff. Well, if you've never heard of it, but you like to role-play, you have to read the books, or it's really hard to get into, and that sort of thing. But everybody's seen Highlander. Everybody knows the rules of Highlander.
I'll agree with you. Easy access is a big thing. With Carla, when I try to get her to play a role-playing game, if we throw it on Battletech, she's very, very hesitant to play, simply because she's like, I don't know anything about Battletech. I'd feel intimidated and overwhelmed because everyone else does. But she loves to play Star Trek. Why? Partially because she's a Star Trek fan, but more than that, because when we throw it on Star Trek, well, she knows Star Trek. Yeah. She knows what Klingons and transporters and shields and Vulcans and phasers and all that stuff
is. Well, here's the problem with it, too, in my opinion. While it's easily accessible, you're talking about a mostly, not always, you're mostly talking about a setting that is very, very limited. Because say you talked about a TV show or something. The TV show doesn't focus on the overarching huge goings on of the world. It focuses on 1 to 5 people and the adventures of the 1 to 5 people, or it's very, very limited. Now I know this is really popular, but Serenity is one example that comes to mind, and there's a lot of people that play the Serenity role-playing game and have fun with it, but to me it's very limited because that's only one season and one movie.
I can see that, but I can see also that being...
But it does have, I mean, it does have a large world, but the thing is that you, as a player, or as the fan community, has to add so much to it that wasn't in the series, or was really
kind of assuming,
hinted at, or you assume,
you know,
based
but,
on
see, that, that's where I
jumps.
Think half the fun is.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. A lot of people have a lot of fun with that.
Well, I guess... I'm sorry, go on, Don.
I was just going to say, I mean, just creating, and you know, moving on from what was already made, you have, you know, you could go anywhere with it. And I think that's great. You know, you, with Serenity, you know, they only developed like, you know, one season. Got a lot of games after that, you know, with just this bare, you know, minimum of information.
Yeah, that's true.
You can definitely develop it and push the limits of it.
Mm-hmm. Let me kind of come at this from a couple angles. The first angle is, Chad, what you just hit on is the sister topic I had written down here, which is that I think it is very, very hard when you're working in a game on a pre-built setting to come up with your own plots. One of the hardest games for me to write for is a Star Wars role-playing game.
Yeah.
Because everything that matters in the universe already happened around a half dozen people. There's not a lot left there to work with. Now, what you can do, as Dawn is suggesting, is you can kind of go out and develop your own things. That while the Empire and Rebels are fighting over here, we're going to make a huge political struggle occurring over here in the fringe worlds that everyone's going to be involved in. And in some cases, I think that's a very viable way to go. Another example where I really struggled with this was I love the feel of a Robotech Invasion series, but it's extremely hard to write towards.
Just because Climber Mospedia. Sorry.
Oh, I know.
Sorry.
But it's extremely hard to write for because ultimately, if they're playing in the setting, survival's part of the game, but the ultimate goal here is to beat up the Regis.
Right.
Well, this is already covered.
Yeah.
Now, I realize you can do things like, let's take the Buffy game and you can create your own stuff. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to create a different vampire slayer who's over here somewhere else. But sometimes that works.
Yeah.
But sometimes it kind of gets to the point of like, well, then why are you playing this? Why don't you just play a game of Hunters Hunted from Vampire the Masquerade and give yourself 5 dots in hand-to-hand combat and give yourself all kinds of perks that make
you
fast?
But if you did that, the other people sitting at the table is like, oh, nice Buffy character. Why don't you just go play Buffy?
Well, but I mean, this would be the understanding sitting down.
Yeah,
you don't need a Buffy RPG. If you're going to have your own setting, your own characters, your own bad guys, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera,
but I would
just
think
grab
that
Hunters Hunted and play a lone wolf game.
Maybe it has more to do with, like, the NPCs that are available. Like, pre-written characters. Oh. It's like, you may not want to run into, like, the main characters, because sometimes...
Look, there's Han Solo!
Yeah. Sometimes that's just really cheesy. But, you know, a bartender or somebody who everybody knows, it's like, you're going to run into this person if you hang out in this town.
See, that's something that I feel, too, is another problem with a lot of these pop culture games. Is that, you know, I do think a lot of them could be good, but when some people run them, it's just like, oh, look, you're playing Star Wars. Oh, look, there's Han Solo. Why don't you go up and talk to Han Solo? Look at all the cool things Han Solo does. Oh, no, look, Darth Vader pops in the room. You can't do anything to him because it's Darth Vader.
And we already know how he dies.
Yeah, or your team takes on Darth Vader.
That wasn't what I was saying, though. Yeah. What I'm saying is there are other NPCs, not the main characters, that are interesting that have not been fully developed that you can interact with or even develop more.
And yeah, that's why I think the Serenity game lends itself more to this than any other game, because there's so little. Like, there is only the five characters, and they play such an insignificant part in the universe, you never see them.
Right.
I think Dawn's right that, yeah, there's things that aren't sufficiently developed where you could play a game where the main characters of the movies, books, TV show, whatever, go right, your characters go left and pursue that avenue instead. Chad, what you were saying about you run into Darth Vader or Han Solo. Ugh. I think those kinds of games work, but they only work in really two types of games.
I don't think they ever work.
Well, they work. Here's why. Number one is if you are basically going to throw out canon, so to speak, that we're going to play Star Wars. We are going to start at the beginning of episode 5, but whatever happens from here on out, it's up to you guys. If you guys kill Darth Vader partway through episode 5, he's dead for episode 6. And so I think it could work for that, if you're allowing them to affect reality.
Yes. No Ewoks.
Burn.
Jesus.
Wow.
You know,
you're bloodthirsty, and I like that.
John loves that Ewok song. He'd fight you if he was here.
The second type of thing I think it works for, and this has to be unanimous, is if everyone around your table is a huge fan of a series.
Yeah.
Where for you, simply doing what we call a tour de realms, where you just wander around and look at famous people and big objects, if you are so into it,
space,
like, man,
tourists,
I can't believe we're on Mount Doom and here comes Frodo. This is so cool. Let's keep doing this. And we got to keep. But if this is your
thing.
And
you're looking down at Frodo from your giant eagle saying, hi, Frodo.
Yeah, exactly. Now,
you know, some people's thing is like pain too, but I'm not into that.
Well, look, personally, I agree with you. And part of the reason I agree with you is because I've always been a firm believer. I've said this many times over. The only thing I walk into an RPG with is my character. Let me affect the world through him.
Right.
And if you take me into a game where all we're doing is a tour de realms, there, I cannot think of a single setting out there I personally am so into that I would want to do that. Because to me, if Darth Vader's here and he's just talking smack, let's go.
Right.
You know, let's throw this stuff down. Let's do it. I don't want to just, ooh, there's Darth Vader, and then we go on from there to Cloud City, and we go on
now
from there.
Now, here's my thing, though, is that if I were playing that kind of game, I would love to play a Lord of the Rings game. I'd love to play... No, I wouldn't love to play a Star Wars game. I'm not a fan. I would love to play, like, a Star Trek game or something like that. But I don't want to meet Spock. I don't want to meet Legolas. I don't want to meet Gimli.
No, I want to meet goddamn Gimli.
You want to be Gimli. You want to have him in your closet.
I do, and pull him out for parties.
Yes.
That's disturbing.
Oh my god, that's the best party ever. But it would... It's
We're
just
going right back to... Please go on.
There's just something really corny about that. It's so, to me, so campy. But the worlds are so interesting. If you could take a big world like Star Trek, Star Wars, Dune, something like that, those are huge worlds, huge sandboxes to play in. You could take less developed ones, not necessarily smaller ones, but less officially developed ones like Serenity or Buffy the Vampire Slayer or something like that. You can still have a whole lot of fun with that. I just don't want to meet the main characters. There's something cheesy. I want to do something different than what happened in the story.
For me, my difficulty with this has always been, if you take a setting where everything that's well-developed or everything that is significant, or both, well-developed and significant, centers around the main party of the book, movie, TV show, as a game master and to a lesser degree as a player, I have trouble really looking at the setting and envisioning more. And some people say, well, that's your lack of creativity. And no, it's really not. I mean, anyone knows me knows I have no problem generating content and being creative. The problem is that when I sit down to make a plot, I want to make a plot that is epic in scale, that's significant in nature.
And not episode 32.
Right. And not
of given story that we're playing.
Right. And when it's like, I can't have the party blow up the Death Star without radically changing Star Wars, which I don't necessarily have a problem doing, but Star Wars is an example that maybe lends itself to that better in some settings. Like, so go back to Buffy.
Right.
You don't know anything much about the world outside of Buffy at Sunnyvale.
They talk about it. They hint at it. And you can make assumptions based on that and get a great game out of it. I don't want to play in Sunnyvale.
Yeah, exactly. And I've always preferred Christy Swanson to Sarah Michelle Gellar anyway, so...
Okay.
We'll just put that on the table.
Well, as long as that's on the table. You know, I wouldn't mind playing a plot that interacts with the main plot, but isn't the main plot.
Right.
Like, when Star Wars put out their Dark Forces game, you played Kyle Katarn. The first thing you do, you steal the plans for the Death Star.
That's a good idea, too. I didn't think about that.
To Leia.
Yeah.
You don't have anything to do with that plot.
That's pretty interesting.
But it's going as you're going.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's like a subtle under interaction.
I could definitely I would definitely get in on that game. That does sound like an interesting game to me, doing something like that. And then you could even meet Princess Leia for a second ended off.
Yeah, it's like, hey, you contracted me to do this, here it is. I never see you again because you never pay me again.
You know, they did that really well, and it's a quick video game tangent here, but they did that really well with the TIE Fighter and X-Wing games.
Yeah, you're right, they did.
Where you played a huge part of the plot that was unquestionably mentioned in the movies, but never developed in the movies. Like, you were there at the Siege of Hoth, not doing walkers, but you were doing things like guiding the transport ships towards the planet to drop off the walkers. Mm-hmm. And then after Hoth, you know, you were searching sectors trying to find the rebellion or whatever.
Half-Life did that with its different spin-off games. I don't know if anybody follows the plot.
I think this kind of goes back to something we talked about before, which is you can hit a point where if you really know what you're doing, the party goes right, while as the players, you know, goes left, and you just diverge from the story while following a parallel line. It's just very hard to do because depending on how cooperative your players are,
I think the
problem
don't
know where
with
they're going to end up.
I think the problem with it too is that people who run these games are such huge fans. They love what they're playing in, and they want to interact with it as much as possible.
Right.
I think a lot of people want to meet Darth Vader.
Well, and that's what I was saying earlier.
Be Luke Skywalker.
These people that are big fans, and understandably so, want a sandbox where they can go in and play with these things. And
I
want to
be Johnny Cash. What can I say?
Yeah.
Johnny Cash.
Wait, what are we talking about again? I'm sorry.
He was a Y-Wing pilot. You know he was a Y-Wing pilot.
Dude, I think he was a Death Star pilot. The man in black was black.
He wasn't a Death Star pilot. He was the Death Star pilot. One. He had one chair, four buttons, moved the whole thing.
And do you know how it fired?
How?
Slow and steady like a train.
Right.
Damn your eyes.
Oh my God.
Man, what time is it? Because it's Johnny Cash time.
All right, then we'll go. Well,
I love you, Johnny.
Okay, then I guess we'll go ahead and wrap it up for this episode. So thank you all for tuning in. And we hope to catch you next time when we have a little bit of better organized of a show. So see you then.
All right.
Bye.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot. This show is copyright 2006, fully owned by its host. The games, movies, and other properties mentioned in this show are the property of their respective owners. Listeners are free to use the show in any non-commercial endeavor, as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com.